Wanna go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 99 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. Well, 99, the great one. This is going to be a great one. This is part two of my conversation with Zach Fitzgerald. Want to thank everybody for tuning in. The first part one was really well received. I put a screenshot of it. We were having some laughs that it was number four over in the UK in hockey podcasts the other day. So I want to thank everybody for listening. That was really cool to see. And it's been, and like I said, the feedback's been all positive. And I think you guys will really enjoy this part two. It's a little more in depth. I know the UK fans will really, really dig it. We get into everything and cover all the different, seasons and the battles and everything else that happened over there. So, thank you for tuning in. If you're new to the show, if you're just tuning in, it's your first time because you saw that I'm interviewing Zach or whatever. Please, I encourage you to check out the back catalog. Like I said, this is episode 99. If you're a UK fan, I've interviewed actually quite a few guys that have played over there. I was just looking at Spotify today just to double check, but Sean McMorrow, Aaron Bowe, Frank Kovacs, Joe Grimaldi, Riley Emerson, Matt Nickerson, Jeremy Cornish, Mike McWilliam, and Jason Goulet, No Name Hockey. Check out No Name Hockey. That's the hockey stick company owned and operated by Jason Goulet in Winnipeg. And if you're a player and you're looking for some good sticks, they've been very well reviewed, and like I said, they're pro made and pro tested. So I mean, you have no better, you know. I would take Jason's word and his staff of ex players' words over Dennis over at the Sports Check. So definitely check out No Name Hockey. Check it out, but. All those guys, and like I said, much like this interview, we timeline their career, and all the interviews have extensive talk about their time over in the UK, because I always find it fascinating over there too, like being over here in Canada, we're on the outside, never been over to the UK to see a game or anything like that, so, it's real, and I've talked to numerous UK fans, but I always find it fascinating how the league is run and the mindset that goes over there with the fans and the players that go over there and what they think. So it's been really fun having those guys on, and not only talking about their North American career, but obviously their time over there as well. You know, it's a different look and a different way of doing things in some instances. And at the end of the day, a tilt's a tilt, right? Doesn't matter what ice surface you're on. So, but yeah, I encourage everybody to go back and check those out. Like I said, I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. There's 55 shows in the network. All the NHL teams are represented. So whatever team you're a fan of, there's a show for you. Check it out. I mean, those guys are putting out shows every week, you know, talking about the week that was or what's coming up or with the free agent or with the trade deadline that just went by, talking about personnel that either signed or got away. So they'll always have something to talk about. As well, for my off-network friends, Joe Lozito over at the Coliseum Chronicles, he's a New York Islander-based Enforcer podcast, and I mean, he's had lots of Islander legends on, from Mick Fakota, Aaron Asham, Jason Strudwig, Eric Bolton, on and on. Right now, he's in the middle of it's going on five parts with Trevor Gillies, and it's like the most in-depth interview ever. But Trevor and Joe have known each other for a long time, so it's a different interview. It's a lot more personal and that type of thing. But Trevor talks about everything from the teammates to opponents to to breaking it down to his thoughts on the role and everything. And the first four episodes, I mean, have just been tremendous. And as a fight fan, yeah, so in depth. And I highly encourage people to definitely check out Joe's stuff, because he does a great job. Joe's so knowledgeable, and yeah, and it's no, I really enjoy listening to that. So definitely check out Joe's stuff, as well as Dan, Paul, and Kelly over at the Obey the Puck show, and Fred and Dave at the Slewfoot Hockey Show. Again, two current shows. They talk about the NHL, the minors, women's hockey, you know, the goings on of, like I said, of what happened in the week. And I always thank them, because it's current hockey and I listen to them, so I don't have to watch. And but I'm still informed. Like I said, I got my finger on the pulse. I know what people are talking about just from listening to those shows. But definitely check those out. But yeah, other than that, guys, I'm not going to go on for too long, because like I said, Zach and I think it's about 2 hours that we go for here. So yeah, so that's a total of, you know, 3.5 hours of Zach Fitzgerald. And I thank everybody that's listened, and yeah, and I hopefully gain some new listeners from you know, coming on to listen to Zach. I hope you enjoyed it, and going forward, you know, Wednesday is player interview day, and normally Sunday I like to do kind of a rant episode and whatever. It's usually something that's bothered me on social media about current hockey or something, or I'll cover, like, I'll find an old program or some old article that we'll talk about, you know, from the 70s or 80s or whatever. It's a real general, just you know, whatever, you know, as Joe affectionately calls it, shit show Sunday show. Most of the time it's I read Twitter and get mad and yell about things, but today, obviously, with this being Sunday, but I didn't want to do part one Wednesday, me, and then part two on next Wednesday, so I wanted to get it all out. So so normally Sunday's a rant episode, but and Wednesday's just an interview day. But yeah, going forward, like I said, I've got a few irons in the fire. I've just got a contact number for a guy, for another, actually a UK sort of legend over there, and I know he's never done a podcast before, and I'd really like to have him on, as I was a fan of him and Junior. So yeah, I'm not going to call out names in case it doesn't happen, but no, and I got a couple NHL guys on the line, so hopefully, you know, going forward here, I'll get a couple Caps on the line and see what I can bring to you guys. But in the meantime, Fourth Line Voice on Twitter, Fourth Line Voice on Facebook, so send me a friends request or a follow, and on social media, as well as Fourth Line Voice on YouTube. And please check that channel out. I have about 2,500 fight videos up there from all the different leagues, junior to pro. Yeah, everything's on there. Got some really cool Zach Fitzgerald tilts on there, actually. In the from part one, the Paul Brown fight that I talk about, is on. That's on my channel, so definitely check that one out. But yeah, like I said, subscribe to the channel. Hit the little bell notification at least once a week. I try to put a few fights up there anyway. So, yeah, so hit the notification so you don't miss anything. But definitely do the deep dive on the channel. I think you'll dig it. You'll find some of the stuff on there pretty entertaining. So, but yeah, other than that, let's get rolling here. And yeah, I guess I was going to say Wednesday will be episode 100, so that's kind of a big deal, big milestone. To be completely honest, I don't have anything, seriously, I don't have anything huge planned or anything. I really don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I'll probably just do a rant episode and thank a few folks. It's kind of odd, because before I was on the network, I had my own channel that, unfortunately, the website crashed, got hacked, but so I did 40-some episodes on there. So really, I've done 150 of these already, but so it's not really 100, but it's 100 for being on the network. So, but that's a big deal, because I know, you know, everyone and their dog has a podcast, and stops and starts, and people quit after a couple episodes. I think I read somewhere that the average podcast is like 7 episodes or something. So yeah, so to have 100 out is pretty cool. I don't know if that makes me brave or crazy or what my problem is, or just bored. I don't know. But no, in all seriousness, so I appreciate the feedback that I've always got, the listens. The show has grown since joining the network, which was really cool. And And like I said, to get feedback from all over the world has been very humbling. And like I said, I laugh and joke about the Chartable. I don't take the Chartable's ranking seriously. It's nice to, when you see your name up there with the Spit and Chiglets and the Don Cherries in terms of listens, like I said, being number four in the UK the other day was really cool to see. And yeah, it's been great. And you know, thank you to everybody that listened and continues to. And again, if you're a new fan or if you're a new listener and you're just one and done because you're here for Zach and that's it, hey, that's cool. Thank you very much. You know, anyway, I appreciate you listening. And, you know, like I said, I hope people stick around if you're new to this. So, but I'll shut up. Let's get into it here. Here's my part two with Zach Fitzgerald. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Thanks, everybody. All right, here we are on part two. We're on a Sunday now with Zach Fitzgerald. Zach, how you doing today?
Good, Darren. Thanks for having me again, brother. I'm all right. I hear some funny things are going on your way, though.
Oh, yeah. We got some snow flying today. And like I said, it's the winter that won't end. But, yeah, it's crazy times, right? So, well, we're kind of doing this in two parts here. And we had left off. You had just finished playing your first NHL game. And but before we leave that 07-08 season, there's a couple incidents I want to ask you about with the Manitoba Moose. We first just kind of talked about it before we got recording here. Was it says on your fight card you picked up a match penalty when you and you fought John Scott? Do you remember this?
I do remember. I can't recall exactly the hit or if it was bad or what the match was exactly for, but I do recall a hit. And then the guy and John Scott came to stand up for him, and grabbed onto me, and I took exception, and we were trying to fight over this guy, you know, we're trying to reach over the guy, and I already had a big enough problem with my hands. I mean, just like the guy is a massive human and throwing punches down Main Street, and I don't think any of my punches landed. They were probably 8 inches short, you know, so, but yeah, that was an interesting one.
Well, and before we leave, I got to ask you, because, of course, you fought a legendary enforcer in Darren McCarty that year.
Oh, yeah.
How'd that go against DMAC?
Yeah, that was kind of a premeditated one for me. I mean, it's Darren McCarty, you know.
Exactly.
The guy that I watched, you know, watched growing up, and what a special thing to have the guy playing against us, and I figured he'd be willing to go, but yeah, we played and asked him to go, and he just literally took exception without hesitation, and it's crazy. He tied me up so crazy right in my collar, and he was throwing little throat punches, and just in hindsight, it was awesome because it just threw me off completely, and I'm already fighting fucking Darren McCarty, you know, like, but now he's got this little trick. He's throwing punches right in my throat, and you know, it was I don't think there's even really a good video of it, which I wish there was. There's a few. I got a few really blurry photos, but the best part about the whole thing was after the game, I don't know what was going on, but it didn't. You didn't normally cross over guys in Grand Rapids. There's a little doorway that you'd walk through, and you'd see guys every now and then. But I didn't end up seeing anybody, and the announcer came down to me. He goes, "Fitz, hey, I got this for you. Big Mac just gave me this. He gave me correct me if I'm wrong, is it Grinder?
Yes.
Grinder CD signed to me, and just sent along his best, and I mean, just what a legend. I mean, the guy gave me the time to step up to a legend that is himself and then pass on his album of his band, and what a legend.
That's awesome. That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, and like the fact that he'd give you a shot, right? Like there's a lot of guys that would be no down doubt, there and yeah. It's like, yeah, go away, kid. You know, like.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, a complete respect for that guy. You know, and, you know, he was trying to do his thing and get back in the game, and it was quite special.
No, absolutely. Well, the following year, of course, go over the summer and, you know, you're back in Vancouver for the 08-09 season. You play with the Moose. going into like, how did camp go? And after playing, like, you get your game, and then, so the following season was a little disheartening not to get any NHL time.
Yeah, unfortunately, I busted my jaw that year, so I was out 8 weeks without, you know, that's quite a huge window. And it was there was actually a lot of injuries with Vancouver that year, and guys were going up and down. So who knows? But yeah, it was unfortunate. It's tough because you get that taste and you just want it, right? Now you're just working your ass off to, you know, you finally kind of gotten there and you want to keep it. So yeah, at the time one game wasn't enough for me and I wanted more, but. You know, we are where we are now. It was a great experience, but yeah, the pressure was, I put it more on myself. I was hoping to stick up there longer.
Yeah. Well, in Manitoba that season, you know, you found it, the 13 tilts and, you know, you're back there with Keane and all them. One of the teammates that you had that I have to ask you about, I know he wasn't there for very long, was Darryl Bootlin.
Booter. I mean, talk about legends.
Yeah.
yeah, no, I mean, even going back to Traverse City, he was in Traverse City. That's where I actually first fought him. I couldn't stand the guy. Like, he was playing the rat game to a cue. It was perfect. You know, he was tough enough to stand up for himself and fight all the tough guys and skilled enough to play on, you know, some of the top lines. So, you know, he was the type of guy that I always wanted to chase after. And we ended up fighting in Traverse City. But, yeah, later on when he joined the Moose, I was like, oh, God, you know, we signed this guy. Like, this, come on, for real? Immediate buddy. I mean, this guy is hilarious. I still Snapchat here and there with him. But, yeah, he was at all the PHPA meetings and just an absolute gem. I mean, you don't find a lot of guys like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you did it for a long time, and yeah, it was a actually really, well, like, not like it's a surprise, but like, yeah, he was a really solid player too.
Yeah, no, he was all around player, man. I could imagine he was probably in the third line in Detroit when he was up there playing, if not second. So it's too bad he didn't get more of a shot, but he still had a great career.
Absolutely. Well, a couple of tilts that I got to ask you about from this year. Of course, you're obviously your paths would cross later across the pond with this guy, but you fought him twice this year, was Adam Keefe. What was it like playing against Kiefer?
Well, you always had to have your head up. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But he was respectful. He was a hardworking, hard-nosed player that, you know, he was skilled enough too to keep a line going and they were able to put some points up. But he was a hard-nosed guy running around, completely feared in the UK and the American League as well. You know, he was buddies with my one of my roommates, Bull Duke. So I kind of got to know him a little bit there. And then, yeah, playing against him. And actually, you know, he was a huge, huge help to me last year in my coaching position. And I wish him all the best over there with Belfast because they're just, you know, he's got a great organization. They do a good job. And he's even on with the GB over there. So, yeah, I've had actually some really close contact with him lately.
Yeah, no, I was always a huge fan of Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, another guy, well, he was over in the UK briefly with you as well, or against you, but you fought with Rosehill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, he was nails, absolute nails. We we locked horns once in, I think it was in Toronto, and he had clipped my roommate Corey Schneider, the goalie. Don't get me wrong, I didn't clip him, but he, I don't know, maybe he just fucking got in his bubble, I don't know, but it was my roommate and there was a little, you know, I knew I had to go after this guy, so we were going and we were both throwing so hard that we ripped apart and then kind of looked at each other and just rejoined again. And I mean, he could throw both hands just as hard as the other, so you got to be very weary with him, and he's a big boy, so, and scared of no one.
No, absolutely. Yeah, well, I mean, we're kind of going off, I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but I was going to add with the Rosehill. I mean, not, I'm just seeing it from a distance, obviously, as a fan and reading about it and stuff. Do you think he got a raw deal over in the UK?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I was literally thinking it too as I finished there, but yeah, he definitely got the raw. I mean, the thing is, you know, when you get targeted over here, by the refs. They're going to talk to you. They're going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Hey, I'm watching and watching. Don't be doing that again, Fitz or Jay or whatever. You know, in the UK, if you get on the wrong side of them, and not every one of them, but some of the refs, you're pretty much doomed for the season. And I did that to myself a few times. But the policies or the department, like the it was just so inconsistent with the rules that he was almost the rule setter for a few of those penalties because they just hadn't seen him. And I mean, I was involved in the game with him where he went to hit our captain and it just looked awkward. Our captain tried to get out of the way, just kind of clipped him funny. And I was on the ice and I actually went after him. And I grabbed him. He's like, Fitz, you know, I'm like, I know. I basically grabbed him like to see what was going on first, make sure and to engage if I had to. Well, we both realized that nothing had happened here. And then he got thrown out. They threw him out of the game. He, I think it was like he tossed his stick or something just out of frustration. Yeah. Like a lot of us had done before. And they just slammed the rule. Like it was amazing. I think it was 6-7 games or so for something like that where you got other players doing far worse and on the ice type stuff. So yeah, 100% he got the short end of the stick. And you know, I mean, not to relate 100%, but there was times when I did too, and he touched on it in past. I'm sure we'll get to it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating as like I mean, you watch those the player safety videos, and it's just like, what are you doing? Like, just I don't know. It's we'll get there. We'll get there. But
okay.
Yeah, that was kind of eye rolling. But
yeah.
Another guy that you fought this year before we leave this season, and I mean, you guys crossed paths a whole bunch of times, and I'm a big fan of this guy, actually, is Erik Nielsen.
Oh, did you say you're not a fan of him?
Oh, I am a fan of him. I dig Erik Nielsen.
I was going to hang up right now. I'm kidding. No, he's what a human, a genuine human. And going back to my season with the Moose there, he was actually responsible for that broken jaw. We and I got a ton of respect for him. We've talked over the years. We've had many beers. But when we were in Peoria, we were scrapping, and it was a good fight. And as you know, he's a very wild fighter. And we were going, and he's super strong. And I think at one point he was either bent over on a knee or something. And I kind of like looked over like just to see what was going on or to attack or whatever. And he kind of came out of what he was doing. He threw a big wild hook and it caught me right in the jaw. And I realized, oh, something's wrong here. And we kind of finished the fight and something's wrong, you know, and get in the penalty box. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, fuck, I can't even bite down. You know, I'm looking at my trainer and I'm kind of giving him the hand and saying like, something's wrong. And he's like, all right, come over. Anyway, long story short, I end up that punch busted my jaw. Did he feel good about it? I don't know, but he is that type of a guy that, you know, I'm sure you guys have all seen the video of him and Big Mac, and that right there just tells you exactly what kind of guy he is as a warrior. And then off the ice with the community, he carried the Manchester Storm on his back. He was just great for them. I mean, he was more or less which I can't think of the best word, but he was.
Well, he's just a really good ambassador for them.
Yeah, ambassador. Thank you for our league and in Manchester, and it was unfortunate, I think, for him because he had such a reputation and he was so tough, and Manchester just wanted this guy to fight, and nobody would fight him at home because they just knew there's nothing to do. You know, there's only so many guys on his level of toughness, and I think every time I was in there, he was hurt, so there was never that chance. When I would have given, you know, him and I give each other chances if we needed, right? And so for him, I think it was unfortunate because he just didn't get any real chances to show what he could do there. So that's unfortunate. But for what he does for the game, it is you can't top that.
Yeah. Well, there's another guy. I mean, didn't he get he get into it with a fan or something behind the bench?
Oh, yeah.
And he
That the guy poured beer down. I mean, poured beer all over him. That's one problem with the fans in certain arenas there. And, you know, touching on, like, Nickerson and stuff like that, where, you know, there's interactions with the fans with poor security, and it's almost like a minor league amateur game at points where the fans are too close. And when there's that much adrenaline and stuff going and people don't quite understand what they're getting into, then things like that happen. And it's not fair for Eric to have to be in that position where he's not even really separated from the person. So that was so unfair. But, you know, that comes down to the inconsistency stuff again.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Well, the following year, 2009-2010, you become a River Rat. What was the was it just time to move on from the Vancouver organization and sign with Carolina, or what happened there?
Yeah, they were once again top notch organization, and they were completely honest with me. We talked for a while, and they just said, "Hey, look, we're moving on to," I can't remember who it was or if it was even a name, but they were moving on. And that was fine because it didn't leave me on the hook, and I was able to go look elsewhere. And Carolina came knocking. I was good buddies with Tim Conboy, who was in that organization. So I was excited about that. They had really good things to say. It just seemed like a good fit, so we went for it.
Well, and so, at Hurricane Camp, what was it like to be around, like, Whitney and Brind'Amour and those guys?
Yeah, you know, Brind'Amour is the everything that everybody says about him is true. So that was cool. It was interesting to be down there in such a different climate, you know, for hockey for me for the first time.
Yeah.
Trying out down there, but no, it was good. They were the coaches were always really good down there. I'll always remember Paul Maurice walking by me. I had a Led Zeppelin shirt on, and he looked at me, go, "Hey, Fitz, they got a song for everybody." I said, "Fucking right." I didn't say fucking right, but I said, "Yes, sir, right away, sir." Yeah, you're right, Mr. Maurice. But no, he's actually a good dude, too. I'll always remember that because Zeppelin's one of my favorite bands, and for him to notice that was cool. But no, it was great to go down there. And my only issue down there was they separated the NHL from the AHL kind of right away. There wasn't really any real opportunity where we thought there might be. I thought that there was a tough spot to when you kind of go in pre-evaluated and not really given a chance to break through. So that was unfortunate. And then, you know, I had a great season, so that was okay. I was happy about my season there the first year with the River Rats.
Yeah, well, and it was a frustrating thing because, like, especially like in your position, it's like, you know, not, you know, knocking anybody on the big team, but it's like, you know, Carolina's not really known for toughness, and it's like they didn't really have a guy, so it's like, you know, I don't know, it was kind of annoying to not see you get a shot anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and I kind of touched on Tim Conboy was like, I would say almost him and I, he was definitely more of a machine, but and played a lot more minutes, but him and I would play a similar game, you know, physical fight when needed to, but, you know, try to play the game, and he could do that, and he would do it as forward as well. So he was kind of that guy that was up and down, but he had a lot of injuries and stuff. And who knows if I was the one after that. But then, you know, like a Mike Angelides was there. He was our captain, and kind of like he finally got his chance. Actually, like a year or two after I left over to the UK, got a shot up in the NHL and stuff. Like, so there was kind of guys in the pipeline that could bring it. But you're right, they didn't really carry a toughness. You know what? The one guy that bothered me there was Gleason. I'm not really here to call out people or names or anything, but, like, you know, he's got a story along with him, and I just that was the guy that I would have liked to take his spot.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, so you're down in Albany, and well, a couple of the teammates there you got was you I think you mentioned him earlier, but Brad Harif.
Yep. Yeah, Harry. Yeah, we first interaction I had with him, I wanted to fucking go home and practice. He was kind of whacking me, cross-checking me, going after me in practice. I'm like, okay, I'm going to like this guy. And we had a fun season of carrying that on.
Yeah, well, you know, an old SJ guy, and yeah, he's kind of been known for that for sure. But
yeah, you know, like kind of once again, like touch on like with Ripper, the pound for pound toughness. You know, Brad was a smaller guy, and he was not afraid of anybody, and he did well. So for him, I would consider him super tough as well.
No, absolutely, and well, I was going to say your coach, you had Jeff Daniels and Kinnear. What were those cats like?
Some of my favorite coaches, definitely. Jordy was great to me. He was very helpful in my career. I mean, I played similar game to him, so he understood what I was trying to do and what I was bringing to the team, which is nice to have that, to have somebody kind of in your corner that understood what you're doing. And JD was just a good coach. Everybody respected him. If he got flared up, you knew something was wrong. And we had some successful teams for sure. We can't remember who it was we lost in the playoffs, but we had a run one year, and I think it was Wilkes-Barre. And we should have made it to the finals. I think it was the Charlotte year with them. But I really enjoyed those coaches. I've talked to both of them recently. JD's up with Carolina, wishing nothing but the best, and Jordy's American League head coach, so they're both rocking it.
Yep. Well, you had 300 minutes this year. That was the highest penalty minute total you ever had, and you were a busy dude. Oof,
oh, God.
Looking at the names, man. I'll hit you with a couple. First of all, I got to go. Former guest of the show, people go back and check out that episode, was Big Mac. Steve McIntyre.
Yeah, that one. My D partner, Casey Bohr, who was actually a teammate of mine growing up as a kid, we played Minnesota Blades and all this shit together, you know, kids, and we're teammates this season. And Big Mac kind of crushed him in the corner. And when he came back to the bench, I'm like, oh, Casey, all right? And he's like, yeah, all right, Fitz. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fucking get him. He's like, no, you don't have to do that. I'm like, I'm going to fucking get him. And he's like, no. You know, because, you know, he's a fucking animal. Anyway, go up to the face-off. I tap on the shin pads, and I look up to him and go, hey, we're going, big boy. You're going. He goes, you sure? Like, yeah, we're going, you know. And so I dropped my shit immediately and tried to get in there and throw a few. And that was about as far as I got with him. He pretty much just kind of hay bailed me, really, like lifted me off the ice. And I don't know if he even, I don't remember. I don't know if he nailed me too bad, because I don't remember. And I'm sure I would remember, because I remember a guy like Westgarth punch for sure. But Big Mac, he more or less just treated me like a hay bale. But the good thing about that guy is he is a respectful human as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah, no, Mac's a really nice guy. And, yeah, one of the bat one. Ugh, man.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that list of that season was, yeah, that was, like, you know, Bugard.
Yeah.
Yabo. All sorts of guys. Yabo, yep. I blanked his name.
Well, I know you fought Brookbank 3 times.
Yeah, Brookbank. Thank you, Brookbank. Yeah, he was absolute nails. That whole team, that Wilkes-Barre team, that was a tough one. Why am I blanking the name? There's another guy on Wilkes-Barre that you're absolute legend. Starts with the B. If you can find it. Anyway, yeah, that was a tough year. By the end of the season, my knob was just a ball because I couldn't hold my stick normally anymore. I was just had to get bigger and bigger and bigger because I couldn't close my hand from just hitting helmets and things like that. And I didn't want to lose my spot, so I just adapted.
Bowleries,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew something was happening every game that year, that's for sure.
Well, and then you had Little Bugard, Aaron, he's around.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Westgarth.
Well,
yeah,
I think Englund was on that team, but he didn't even have to do anything.
Yeah. Pascal Morency, Garrett Klotz.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a tough year.
Yeah.
Every year.
Well,
every
year. You mentioned it before, but Westgarth.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Just a big guy, and the way that he would stand, and you can kind of see it in the videos, it was just like a side posture and like a hook, like a long hook punch, and he, like an uppercut, like a long, not sorry, not a hook, a huge uppercut punch he would throw all the time. It just kind of came from across his body. But yeah, he, like I touched on before, he punched me one time in the side of the neck, like right under the chin, like right where your chin, peak of your chin is, and down. It fucking hurt for 4 months, dude. It hurt for 4 months. And there's a lot of nerves and things in there. And so when you get bruised up on that spot, and I mean, God. But yeah, Jordy used to love it when I would go, when we would play there. He'd be like, oh, Fitzy's out there. He doesn't give a shit who's on the ice. Fucking Westgarth's out there. He's out there running, guys. He doesn't give a shit. Jordy's a beauty like that. He just, yeah. He'd be yelling that stuff just because, you know, guys like that, they intimidate the shit out of most players, you know. And you got long hair like that, and you're 6'4", 6'5". Intimidating.
Well, here, I'm going to ask you about this because, like I said, from the fans, we don't know. We're on the outside, right? So yeah. I'm going to ask you because, I mean, I already know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask you anyway. But for the listeners, there's always this thing online, you know, through the media. And I mean, you've heard it a million times that, like, you know, guys like yourself or Westgarth or whatever, it's like, it's that, you know, they don't really bring anything anymore. It's not the 80s anymore or whatever. What's it like? I mean, not in your sense, because, I mean, obviously you're not scared of them. I mean, you'll go fight them. But you've seen what a Yablonsky or a McIntyre does on the ice to the bench. Is it, like, legit? Like, is there legit fear of those guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, the guys that don't want anything to do with that, they're not going to go anywhere near this guy. They're going to change when he gets on the ice. And they're just not going to want to step up to it. For one, maybe they don't think they have to. For two, they're scared. For three, I mean, it's hard-nosed hockey. If you're not willing to step up to it and at least, you know, go for it, you're not going to. And not to say that a lot of hockey players aren't going to do it, but there is some that just don't want anything to do with it. And yes, it can control the game, especially if you got two or three guys that not necessarily a Yabo. If you had a Yabo and you had a, you know, a guy that's playing third line that's heavy, like a Guillaume Davien or somebody like that, and like a D-man that's tough or something. Those are some of the best teams I ever played on. I had somebody in almost every position. And you're just in, especially when playoffs come, you're in guys' heads. And the best ones were the ones that would stay out of the penalty box, that wouldn't take the minors.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, the presence alone. I was gonna as you were talking, I was thinking, was there ever a, you don't have to name names or anything, but was there ever a teammate, or did you ever hear of like a teammate that would, he just starts shit all the time, and then like basically get you into fights all the time, and after a while, it's just be like, dude, enough. Like, what are you doing? Like, did you ever have that?
I had a few of those guys. Not too many, but there was a few of those guys, and they either got their lesson taught to them and there was no hard feelings on my side or anybody else on the teams because they put somebody else in that position too many times, or they come to the realization of what they're doing and they cool it down and or step up to the plate when needed. I've never had to like throttle anybody and grab them and say, what the you're doing, you know, because I think it was communicated without words, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's when you're starting to put the team at risk or teammates, then yeah. Or at, you know, at times like in the American League, you just disappeared if you were putting they just sent you down. You know?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, no, there isn't anybody I'd bring up specifically, but, you know, the guys that were good at it are in the NHL right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You know, like Brad Marchand, I wanted to take his head off.
Yeah.
I wanted to absolutely kill him, and I'm sure he put his teammates in a lot of positions, but look at him now. I mean, he's got the skill on top of it, but he brings that rat game where he's literally in everybody's head.
Yeah, well, and it's like it's sort of like a product of the new game, right? Like you can kind of, it's kind of consequence free now, right? So you can do that.
Oh,
shit.
For sure.
Like in the 80s, he would have just, you know, someone would have grabbed him, beat the shit out of him, and you would have just got like an extra 10-minute misconduct. Now you'd get 10 games and they talk about jail sentences. But I mean, back then it was just 10, right? So, you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. It's changed and there is a lot more stick work and some more dangerous stuff. But I'm just glad they're keeping guys that are still heavyweights that can play the game that are still, they're still there. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, I mean, you kind of course, you started at the beginning of 2000 with Seattle, and there was still, you know, every team had guys and whatever, and it was still quite prevalent. Yeah. And as you sort of went on, it started that change, that transformation started changing, kind of right around this time, that 2010. I mean, you still had the Brooke Banks and the Boulerice and Mac and Yabo and stuff, and Morasti and those guys, but I mean, it was slowly starting to kind of just go away from those guys. Do you, well, I mean, we can be honest talking about it, but I mean, do you think that's a good thing? Or, like, what do you think?
Well, I think that you can't give up a roster spot now to somebody that can't at least contribute to the game and not take a minor penalty and not at least, like, run around, create some havoc, some energy, and also create that fear. I think there's room for guys like that, yes, 100%. And it's needed because things will get out of hand. If you got guys, and I won't name any names because it's just I've already done enough of that, but you got guys that have no action taken against them. If they cross the line, then they're going to continue to do it, and it's going to get worse and worse and worse. So you have to have somebody. You got to have guys. And like I touched on, like Guillaume Deviano is one of the best guys I played with for that, where he could literally be out there for playing 20 minutes, but also have that toughness to go. So you need guys like that. You know, like Lucic and those guys. Obviously, they're getting to the end of their careers. It's kind of crazy to say because I'm their age, but they are needed. 100%, and fans and people that watch the game, they're not going to really necessarily see that fear that you're talking about, or the intimidation, or making space for yourself. I let you so like to say in the corners, you creating space for yourself with, you know, they think you're going to hit you, or you're coming in physical. There's a lot of elements to the mental game for sure.
No, absolutely, yeah. Well, like you said, the following year in Charlotte, you guys had a heck of a run. You know, you're back at it again. One of the names that came up on your fight card that I have to ask you about was old PL3 there, Pierre-Luc Laborde.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bad dude, man.
Nails. He would punch straight down Main Street, one of the hardest punchers. I can never, every single fight, he hit me hard. Every fight, he hit me hard. Huge hands. Probably under it, you know, like when he did get a chance to play a little bit, you know, he could play the game and he's a huge guy. He'd crush guys. But yeah, right down Main Street, he had just the perfect boxer's punch. You know, it wasn't like we talked about before, the big windup. It was straight from the shoulder and using your momentum and punching like a boxer. I'm surprised he didn't get more of a chance in the NHL.
Yeah. So am I. Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, I was always a big fan of his. Another guy that was kind of, he'd swing wild, and I mean, he did it for a long time, and I got to watch him here in Prince Albert for a while with Grant McNeil.
Oh, yeah. He's a good dude, too. We were kind of in similar. I think he was just a year older than me or so, but another legend that fought everybody. I don't think he needed to give me that fight. I think that was one of those ones where he was like, all right, Fitzy, you know, we'll let this go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was, there was another guy. I've heard people, there's mixed reviews on this cat was Robitaille.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was one of those rats. He was one of those guys. No, but he might have actually been one of those guys that put players in a bad spot. And there's literally, I think it was my only fight with him. I literally chased him around the ice. He was the guy to me that I couldn't stand. I had to get a piece of him. And I think it was Bolarice or somebody was literally skating behind me going, Fitz, we're going. I'm like, no, I'm not. I am chasing this guy. Like, I'm literally chasing this guy and I'm going to get him. I don't care what you say. You can punch me in the back of the head type feeling is where I was at. And I don't remember specifically what happened or what he had done, but yeah, that was that fight.
Yeah, I know, listening to Joe Lazito's podcast, the Islander podcast there, he's got Trevor Gillies on. And they're, you know, and Gillies put the mouth to him. Oh, he was not a fan.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few. It was interesting, actually. Gillies was not a fan of his or Dennis Bonvy's, actually. He was not. He shit all over Bonvy, too, which was kind of interesting to hear. But,
you know. Well, because Bonvy is good at talking. So I'm sure he had something good to say to him, right? You know, and there's guys like that, too, where you had no response.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's exact kind of what he said, right? Yeah, and Gillies is a rather intense individual, so
yeah.
To say the least. Actually, one of the guys that was on the team with you here in Charlotte, of course, is the from the legendary Sutter family, Brett Sutter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a player to have. He was a leader, good guy. Really down to earth. You know, if you didn't know his last name, you went to known family he came from, because he's just good with everybody. And it was a pleasure to be his teammate for sure. He went on to have a good career after that too. So it was good to touch with him for a little bit.
No, absolutely. Well, the following year you signed with the Montreal Canadiens, and, you know, obviously the most storied, you know, them and the Leafs, the two most storied teams in the NHL. What was it like to go to Habs camp and just put on that logo?
Well, that was like the most stressed summer I'd had. Things weren't like, you know, nothing was really on the table. And then the Habs came around and we were just like, all right, this is unbelievable. Okay, let's do this. It was my wife's father's favorite team, you know, and we're just all excited about it. And yes, like you say, just to kind of throw that jersey on, to feel the legends that have worn it and to go into that rink and the city was a really cool experience. I would have liked to see the city a little bit more, but camp was cool. Ryan White was great to me. He kind of took me under his wing there. Ton of respect for him. One of those guys that can play the game and tough as nails. So that was cool. And then playing for Hamilton that season was one of my favorite seasons. Mike Anlauer, the owner there, absolute gem of a human, treated us like the NHL, treated us like, you would have had a seamless transition from Hamilton to Montreal as far as how they treated you. So I really loved it there. I really wanted to sign back. I did my best to sign back, but that's just how hockey goes with those one-year contracts, and I enjoyed my time there.
No, did you get along with Subban?
I did. I didn't talk with him much. He liked to talk, and I just kind of listened, and you know, they had their inner squad of boys up there, so you know, it is what it is. I don't really have I can't say I did or not. I didn't really have any time with them.
At this point, like when you're at those NHL camps, I mean, the next year in Philly and stuff, like you were saying before, there's some of the teams, there's a separation, you know, you got the NHL guys, the AHL guys, and you know, the cool kid table and all that stuff. But at this point, I mean, you've been around, you've been a pro for 6, 7, 8 years. Do you kind of get treated different than the other AHL guy? You know what I mean? Like, is there kind of like, or is it still like, we're NHL, you're minor league. Is there still that sort of wall?
Well, I wouldn't say that's necessarily true for every team. I just felt that way in St. Louis when I was young. And you know what? There was probably a lot of ignorance as being a young kid, but I just didn't feel welcomed at the time when I probably needed it most, right? Being a young kid and shit. And then, you know, you go up to Vancouver and it was like, wow, eye-opening. And then Carolina was really good. People were really welcoming there too. And then Montreal was good. It was just like, it was such a big show there. There was so much going on and the facilities were huge. And the way they had it set up, it was inner squad, like mixed stuff. So you were mixed in with the NHL guys more. So I didn't find that separation as much. But yeah, there is like the little groups they stick to each other. And I mean, answering your question specifically, I think the only way that I maybe would have been treated a little bit differently is knowing some of the guys because I was older there in the NHL, maybe spending a little bit more time with them just because I was more familiar with them, maybe from agent or, you know, previous team or whatever it was. So I think just at that time, like you said, you've been around a little bit more, you know more guys. I think the coaches, when you're at that age, maybe give you a little bit more indication of where you are. Montreal, I don't think I ever really had a shot there. I think I was on a PTO tryout. But just to go there was worth it all. I'm trying to think of the D-man that came out of there that year that he actually still playing. Physical D-man. Never fought. Russian kid. Anyway. It was a good experience for what it was to be a part of that organization. We got to actually play an American League game in the rink, and both in Montreal and Ottawa, so that was quite special.
No, well, yeah, absolutely. And like you said, storied franchise, and speaking of Gillies, when he was shitting on guys, you fought one of the guys, I forgot about this, that Gillies shit on. And there's been, like I said, there's been a number of, I mean, tough dude, without a doubt. Francis Lessard.
Big Cranky. Yeah, actually, he was, I don't know the name of the rink in Ottawa, but there's the NHL rink there, and we got to play our, an American League in-season game against Binghamton, and that was the fight with Cranky. And, I mean, I knew who was in the house, you know, and yep. I was scanning around, I'm like, big, we gotta go, Cranky. We gotta go. He's like, yeah, bitchy. I'm like, you know, he's just a fucking machine. But I actually was quite happy with that fight. I don't think that video is out there, and I wish it was, but I was happy with my fight against him because he's nails. He's lefty. I can see why Gillies wouldn't like him. 100%. You know, he'd run around. He was, you know, he kind of had that, ooh, I don't know, like, I'm gonna kind of crush you and think about it after type deal. But that's.
Well, Gillies' issue with him was he's like, Francis is a tough enough guy. He didn't need to pull the shit that he pulled. Like, he'd jump you or he'd grab you at the end of the shift. Right. And, you know, and he goes, or he'd sucker you. And he goes, he didn't need to do that. He was tough enough where he didn't need to. You know, that was Gillies' issue with Lessard.
I appreciate that. I do appreciate that. I actually had a conversation with Riley Cote one time when I was playing for him in Adirondack about how we felt we were a little bit too honest at times, and maybe got the worst end of a fight because of it. So there's always thinking about that too. You know, maybe he didn't want to get in that position where he didn't want, he needed to make sure he was ready. You know, maybe it was a little fear thing. Maybe it's just the way that he was. Maybe he wanted that rat aspect, but I get it why Gillies, you know, I get it why Gillies would be pissed because Gillies was scared of nobody. He was scared of nothing.
No. Yeah. Well, another guy that you fought a couple times was Colton Orr.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. So, yeah, okay. That was another kind of not quite Darren McCarty, but, you know, Colton Orr is in the minors. All right. I know he's going back to the NHL. Okay, I got to get my shot here. So, and playing in Hamilton, obviously, like you mentioned before, huge rivalries with Toronto. So, the first time we fought, it was a good fight. Their announcer disagreed and said that I got my head absolutely torn off by Colton Orr, but that's cool because it's Colton Orr. I'm all right with that. But, the second time we're in Toronto and, I can't remember what happened, but I ended up fighting Kelsey Wilson and we used to fight all the time. We were like almost the exact same fighter, same height, same weight. all our fights were really good. The first time we fought, he tagged me good, and I always wanted to fucking get him back for that. But anyway, I'm fighting Kelsey Wilson, and we're going toe-to-toe right at the bench, and all I can see, like, there's not a lot of memories I have from middle of fights. It's pretty much a blackout, but we're doing it right at the bench, and all the boys are just howling. They're just loving this, and I'm kind of, like, yelling, like, oh, yeah, 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 and I'm like, you know, for some reason I have this extra whatever. And we're fighting, and the fight ends, and I turn around, and Colt Knorr is fucking he's shaking up our Freddie, one of our assistant captains. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. So I went right over to Orzy, and I kind of, like, tapped him on the shoulder, like, grabbed him on the shoulder, and he turned around swinging. I'm like, holy shit, I'm in a fucking fight with Colt Knorr after I've already just gone with this guy. Now I got to fight one of the toughest guys in the world in the game. Like, what's going on here, you know? But there's a couple of really good pictures of that where we're, like, both kind of missing each other with huge punches and both of our hair. Like, it's a good, really good – those will be some frameable photos. But, yeah, to fight that guy was awesome. Then we're getting the penalty box, and he goes, Fitzy, what the fuck was that? I was like, you were shaking up, Freddy. I was fired up. I don't know. He's like, well, I don't know what you were doing. I said, well, it's rookie party night, so I don't care. That's all right if I'm kicked out. So have a good one, Orzy. Keep it under control. See you later.
Yeah.
I got tossed out for a second fight there.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It was for a good, yeah, like you said, good for a good cause. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to sit up there, sit up in the stands and kind of prepare myself for rookie party in Toronto.
Well, I mean, that's a pressing thing. You know, you gotta plan these things.
I was smiling ear to ear. I just fought Colt Knorr after a scrap with Kelsey Wilson. I was all right with that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, another name that's on here, and I really like this guy, and he didn't, unfortunately, stick around the NHL very long, but Anthony Peluso.
Oh, yeah. He's a big boy. There's no really getting in the inside of him. I thought he was going to really stick after his year in Winnipeg, but yeah, he was tough. Real tough. Real tough.
Well, and another guy you fought a couple times was Patrick Bortolo.
Oh, yeah. Another huge human. He definitely got the best of me the first fight. Second time, some reason, I grabbed him in his name bar over his shoulder, and because he was so big, and I must have had just a good grip, he couldn't kind of get for a few seconds there. I had him because he couldn't get out of it. I'm like, what's going on, you know? And then he broke through, and it was a different fight after that. But to fight that guy was hard. And then he came over to the UK. And once again, everybody was scared of him. He was playing the same game. And, you know, it is. And then he moved on from there. But, yeah, another tough human.
No, absolutely. Well, I forgot to ask you this before, but kind of like when you were talking about the jerseys and stuff like that, I know, and a few of the listeners always want me to ask this stuff. Were you at, like, did you do anything to your jerseys? Like with tearaway sleeves or two tie downs or anything crazy?
Yeah, the front tie down, and not all the time. There was, because of the rules, it would change. But when I could get away with it, I liked the front tie because otherwise it come up over your face. And actually, that reminds me, in touching back on Kelsey Wilson, and it's this season actually, the outdoor game. And you might even be asking about it. The outdoor game was the second most fun I've ever had playing professional hockey. Bringing me back to being a kid on the outdoor rink, and I knew the whole world was watching, right? Or at least Canada.
Yep.
And we're skating around, and Kelsey Wilson's on their side, and we're skating by and going, "Hey, Wilsey," you know, skating by. "Hey, it's a good night for a fight tonight." You know, and he's shaking his head, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah." And I think it was just right away into the game. We had a good scrap there, and that fight actually kind of revives every year for a little while, but that fight I liked, and that was right there why I liked that front tie, because he gets the jersey over my face and it looks like he's pounding me, and then I finally get a hold of him and he's pounding me, and then I get him back at the end. So it's a good scrap.
You know, absolutely it was. Yeah, actually I think I got a cool picture of that fight too. Yeah, like speaking of the outdoor games, obviously, well, you just mentioned it. How like, do the boys like those games, or is it just kind of like, oh, God, you know?
Well, I think they're a little bit watered down now, but I think for me personally, and I can only say for me, like I said, second most fun I've ever had playing pro hockey, just being outside, the smell, just how it was when I grew up. You know, you're playing in the sunshine. It was a beautiful day. It was just cold enough. The sun was shining, and it just brought me back. You know, the nostalgia of being a kid and having the dreams of, you know, oh, game seven of the Stanley Cup finals and,
yep.
You know, things like that, you know, they all kind of come back to you. And I was 100%, and you could ask my teammates, they may remember, I was buzzing. I was absolutely, we got pumped, but I was buzzing.
Well, I always laugh. I think it was Morasti that I talked to because he had the great fight with Jablonski at the outdoor game. But, I mean, those two would have fought anyway, but it was just like, yeah, he said it wasn't hard to find a fight at the outdoor game, you know?
No.
No.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of eyes on you. You might as well, right?
Yeah. Well, the following year, I mean, you sort of kind of talk about a perfect team for you to land on is Philly. You know, yeah. I mean, an organization, if you're going to ever fit in an organization, I would think Philadelphia would be it. What was your experience in the Flyer organization like?
Well, that's how I felt when I signed there too. I was so pumped. You know, I got down there. It was a good experience. They were a good, welcoming crew. Once again, I thought the Philly pros were great. Jay Rosa was there. He was very welcoming. And so for me, it was overall a good experience. I thought that, you know, I didn't really see myself breaking through, in all honesty, because of the guys that kind of ahead of me in that position. It was more or less keep showing what I can do here. If the opportunity arises, then I'm going to take it, right? But yeah, there was a few guys kind of I felt that were ahead of me in line. And then our first year was the lockout. Was it the first? I can't remember. If it was the first or second year. It had to have been the second because we didn't have training camp. Or did we? Anyway, I can't remember specifically, but the way that they have things set up down there is great. They got the rink. Everything's all right down there with all the other sports stadiums, and the practice facility is great. It's more or less where the guys live. So it was a really good spot. And, like, you know, you go in there, once again, ton of history. You know, the Broad Street Bullies and, you know, Riley Cote is down there with assistant coach. And, you know, you got a lot of things to kind of look forward to.
Did you interact with Berube much?
Not a whole lot. No, I didn't really have the opportunity.
But like, you mentioned how was Cote as a coach?
I liked him. I mean, he was honest. It was early on in his coaching. So he was learning a lot as he was going, but he was super prepared. The way that he played the game, just kind of, worked with his coaching style. You know, he got the respect from the players. You know, as long as you were coachable and willing to leave it out there, then you were all right with him. Right. And, you know, he didn't expect you to do anything outside of what you're there for. He expected you to do what was necessary, and I respect that. And he was good with off-ice stuff, with everything. Just the way that, you know, he prepared himself and the things that he went through, he passed on that mentorship to us. And the way that he eats and takes care of his body now after the way that, and, you know, I'm sure you've seen online the way that he talks about what he was like before. So he was good for us.
No, absolutely. Well, some of the teammates, I got to ask you, before we get across the pond here, I got to ask you, Zach Rinaldo.
Yeah, he was always a guy I always wanted to grab him when I played against him. Like when I was in Albany, because he was it would have been down in those days. And, yeah, I always wanted to grab him, but you know what? He did his job well, and he fit well with that organization.
Yeah. Well, there was a young guy that I was a big fan of that he was a rookie at the time when you were there, Derek Mathers.
Yeah. I talked to him a little bit recently. Yeah, he was, we were line mates. I tried to kind of like do my best to be a veteran for him. Because at that point in my career, I was playing forward and D. So I was playing, I was like 6'7" D and then fourth line forward. So I play a lot with him and interacted with him a lot, hung out with those guys, even though I was the old fart, I was hanging out with the young kids, but he was a really good kid and just a massive guy. It's super tough. Good teammate. So I enjoyed my time with him.
Okay. A couple of the tilts I got to ask you about, cause these are big names and man, your fight card, just going through your fight card, it's just insane. But Brett Gallant, I know you fought him a few times.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I would like touching on the pound for pound and act like for his size and weight, toughest guy. Accuracy, the top two guys I ever fought. Every single time he nailed me, both hands. He had, and I'm sure you can see, he has this pull and punch style that a lot of guys try to do that can't be done as well as he does. He almost pulls you right into his punch. He'll grab you right in the collar and pull and punch, and that's where a lot of the impact, and that's where he knocks out guys. He'll pull you in and fucking smoke you right down Main Street. And there's a lot of fights with him where it was rough waters.
Well, it was funny, Curtis Gabriel, I can't remember what show it was on, but of course he's been making noise lately in San Jose and stuff, and somebody was asking about his toughest fight, and I think, of course, they thought he was going to say Ryan Reeves or something like that, and he goes, oh, the toughest guy in hockey is in the American Hockey League. He goes, Brett Gallant would whip everyone's ass. Yeah, so he was just like, Gallant's the toughest guy in hockey, that's what he said, in all leagues. So, like, okay, well, you know, there you go, but... Yeah,
I'm surprised that the Islanders didn't give him more of a chance. Like, he fit right into when Brett Thompson was the assistant coach there.
Yeah,
dude, I can talk about all this stuff now, but I actually talked to Brett Thompson about 3 days after I signed with Philly. He had just signed with the Islanders and called me. He said, Fitzy, where are you going? What are you doing? I said, I just signed with Philly. He goes, oh, I just signed with the Islanders. And I said, fuck me.
No.
But hey, because, you know, you don't have a lot of connections in the game. And when somebody likes you and they'll can maybe, you know, add a little influence on you, well, you got to take what you can get. Who is to say it would have ever worked out? I was super happy with the Philly organization, but they should. But like having a guy like Tomer there, I wish they could have got Gallant up there. And his brother's fucking tough too.
Oh, yeah. But the thing I don't get with Gallant, yeah, they bring him up. He gets his one NHL game and he buckles Matt Cassian. And it's like, okay, and then that's it? It's like, really? Like, okay. You know, like, I don't know. Oh, yeah. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Player either. He's not a liability, you know? He can play the game. He's not. And that's like what we talked about before. He's a type of guy that could be playing the game now.
Yep. Yeah, well, and like you said, his brother Alex, I mean, he's almost as tough. It's like, yeah, that's a pretty ridiculous tough family over there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Alex just pummeled some guy the other night that I saw. Well, another guy that you fought, of course, legendary NHL top, he was around the NHL, was Cam Jansen.
Yeah. Jano and I have a pretty good relationship now. We spent a lot of time punching each other in the face, I suppose. But yeah, it started that year when he would have really had no reason to fight me. But we were going at the. I asked him on the face off. I go, Jano, we're going. He's like, yeah, yeah, okay, all right. So I dropped my gloves and he kind of skates away. I'm like, oh, what the shit? So I kind of pick my stuff up and the play goes on and we get to the front of the net. He goes, oh, Fitzy, I'm sorry, my bad. So I like kind of grab him like, all right, we're going now. He's like, yeah, yeah. But that was our first experience. And then, you know, when he was in the UK, he was didn't change a thing. You know, he didn't skip a beat. He was the same player he was in the NHL. And basically, I had no choice but to, we were playing on a rival team, Sheffield versus Nottingham. I had no choice but to fight this guy.
Yeah, well, it's like, and it was, yeah, like you said, he's one of those guys that, I mean, I know the UK fans are even talking, he's like, I guess he's one of those NHL guys, he always kind of gets viewed as the NHL guy going over there, that he was like the one guy that never changed his style, right? Like,
right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Still ran around the same and whatever, and yeah. Because, you know, some guys, I don't want to say mail it in, but I mean, I think some guys sort of view it as a paid vacation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and in a way I understand, like, I completely get, you know, you pay your dues for a long time at the top level. Why would you want to go to a place where there's some guys that want to challenge you because you're Cam Jansen, and they just want to be able to say that, and there's a higher chance of you getting hurt when you're going over there for one to play the game and yeah, bring your tough element, but you're not like getting called up to the NHL. So there's, you know, there's different ways to think about it. And, you know, my wife would even question about what I was doing, you know, in the last few years, you know, you don't need to fight as much, you know, cause you know, at first she loved it, right? Oh yeah. You love this all, you know, and then, you know, you get married and you see the guy all the time and things that can happen and what you can come home like. And, you know, she kind of would question it there. So, you got maybe that element on guys too, their family. And there's lots of ways to think about it. But, yeah, like when you go to the UK and after 10 years in the NHL, I mean, I know the fans would expect them to fight, but somebody that's realistic wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, like I've talked to a few guys that went over there. And I mean, I'm not going to say anything because the UK fans will fucking send them hate mail or something, but oh yeah, they were like, oh no, it was a free vacation to go sightsee basically and take the girlfriend before we start a family and come back home and get on with life, right? So it's just like and I mean, at the same time, I mean, I guess the fan, like, I can understand from a fan's point of view, obviously, that that I don't want to say cheated, but I mean, hey, we're paying this guy, do your thing, right? But it is what it is. But
well, yeah, I mean, there was guys like that, but I can definitely say that Cam Jansen definitely was not that guy, because you know what? He went over there and he fought everybody. He even fought me in this one Challenge Cup game where we were getting absolutely pumped, and it was way too late for me to fight, but I'm thinking, oh shit, I got to do something. I'm like, Geno, we're going. Fitzy, yeah, you sure? All right, whatever. All right, let's go. He just kind of, he put himself in a position to get injured because he had respect for me and for the game, and he left it out there. Like, he's definitely a 100% left it out there till the end of his career.
Well, let's get into the UK here. I mean, what brought you overseas to Brayhead, and how did that all go? How'd you end up over in the UK?
Well, it just got to the point in the American League where, like I mentioned before, I was 6'7" D. With Adirondack, playing a little bit of fourth line, 28 years old. The window in all reality is very small to make it to the NHL at that point. So, I just kind of let the reality set in, figured, I got a great opportunity to go overseas and kind of, like you mentioned, explore, but also play the game. And we spoke to a few countries here and there, but Ryan Finnerty called me, and he's another tough guy, called me, and we chatted for a while. He talked about coming over as a player assistant coach, and I thought, well, this is kind of a cool opportunity to go over and play and then, have that assistant coach label and help on that aspect, help some younger kids. So that kind of, like, sold it for me. We went over, and it being Scotland as well. English speaking country, destination place, kind of made sense to go. So that was good. It was a pretty easy decision. And my wife and I just went for it.
Well, you get over there and, like, Lee Salters is there, Stephen Meyer, how Chris Frank and guys like that. How was it, how were you received, and like, and did, what were your immediate thoughts of Brayhead when you landed there?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of had that team I was talking about. We had, myself and Frankie, and then Lee Salters up front, and I'm blanking on if we had somebody else up there, but we, you know, we had a tough team and we had a good team. We had, you know, Matt Keith, who had, I'm not sure how many NHL games, like you said, Stefan Meyer, so many NHL games. We had, you know, NHL veterans and a guy like myself coming from the American League, and then some other guys that had some experience in Europe that fit really well into the UK. So it was an eye opener, more or less, for the ice size. That was quite difficult, and also to kind of play my game where you're losing. Well, you're not losing, but you're gaining 6-7 feet on the outside where I'm used to closing off players and using my body. Well, now it's a different game. So that was interesting. And then at the same time, in the same league, you go into a rink like, well, Manchester wasn't there my first year, but Cardiff, which is the same size as what Manchester is now, where it's basically the size of my living room, where, you know, it's a pinball game. It's smaller than any North American rink, and the game is, you know, like Finner will basically, he's the coach there now, will basically build a physical, intimidating Erik Nielsen team to play in there, because you don't want to go in there and get bashed around. And so, you know, that's kind of the elements you have at first. And but then at the same time, you're like going to see all these castles, you're trying all these whiskeys, and you're just kind of, you know, actually the best part was after our preseason games, there's beer in the locker room after. I'm like, whoa, this is good. This is preseason. I like this kind of preseason. They're like, whoa, this isn't preseason. This is basically every team's got to hook you up with beers after the game. I'm like, well, okay, all right, I signed up at the right league. We're okay.
Yeah. How was your first year there? How was what was the skill level like? Like, what were you surprised by it, or how was it?
Yeah, so it was tough to say because you only see video from what people say, so you don't quite know. But when I basically where I compare it to, then I would say my first year, I'd say we would be competing with the top East Coast leagues. And maybe the bottom American League team now where the league is, I would say the Cardiffs and the big dogs, they would definitely compete with the bottom five American League teams. They probably wouldn't win a lot of games, but they would compete and they would do well in the East Coast. So it's kind of in between there. And every year on year has gotten better and better, and it will just continue to get better. As the money grows there, if it does, they'll get more and more players. And the fan base is only growing from there, so the money should grow. That if they could get some TV revenue, it should grow to a better league. And they're getting into the Canadian Hockey League, CHL. I forget what it's called right now, but it's basically all the top leagues in Europe. They're getting good games against those guys, and kind of spreading the word about the UK growing as a league.
Yeah, well, you kind of you mentioned the money part. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to do your taxes or anything, but in terms of like salary, was it American League comparable?
I would say maybe. It's tough to say. The top teams, not the top teams, the top budget, not even top, the higher budget teams. They'll be paying a few of their players American League salaries for sure.
Yeah.
And maybe even like a medium level American League contract, and then more or less like East Coast level money. But the big thing is they hook you up with the living and the car there, and it's they pay the taxes. So, and the exchange rate for a Canadian is great. So there's a couple things working for you there.
Yeah.
And then I did it myself, but there's a program, an MBA, Masters in Business Administration program there, where they'll hook a lot of guys that have former university experience, or even myself, like a guy like myself who didn't, to add on to their contract. And they usually try to use it to pay you less money, but it's just a negotiation tactic. But it's also a huge bonus and almost priceless for like a guy like me. You know, I have an MBA where I don't have my university undergrad, but I was able to go through the the program, and they like the hockey players there. You know, I feel like hockey players, they put their nose down and they grind through it and don't just take it for granted. So it actually works out well for everybody involved, and the money you will see go up, I think.
Yeah. I had Jeremy Cornish on the show, and he took advantage of he got the education package through them, and I know he's a teacher over there now, but he was saying he can't really put a price on that for sure.
No.
No. So you get over there, and you got a few run-ins, a few incidents. one of them, I think you fight him three times, was another former guest of the show, Matt Nickerson.
Yeah, that was literally the day I signed, and Twitter and all that stuff, as you know, was massive over there. And was literally, it wasn't even a, hey, welcome to the Purple Army. It was, when are you going to fight Matt Nickerson?
Yeah.
Our first encounter was probably not a smart decision by me. My shoulder was a bit fucked up, but I went for it anyway. And then touching on the social media aspect, we're fighting, and at the end of the fight I went down, and so they all, Nickerson knocked you out, you this, blah blah blah, and they will tear you apart both in person and on Twitter. And I made the mistake of saying, well, listen, this is a good scrap, I slipped at the end. Holy shnikes, you slipped, huh? You slipped, blah blah blah. Well, they just ripped me one, so I kind of learned early about that. But I mean, they're our biggest rival. Like, once again, up in Scotland, the Fife versus Brayhead is the biggest rivalry up there. And so, you know, you got Matt Nickerson, who's literally a god in Fife, walking around with his beard. He was like a king there. I mean, they just praised this guy. You know, kind of knew what you were getting into every time with him.
Well, and I could tell you from being on social media, I said this before we got going. Yeah, I spent a lot of time pumping Fitzy's tires over there. I was in there fighting for you. But, you were, like, the most hated dude. Well, and I think it was, it was, like, polarizing, right? You either loved or you're hated. And it was, and I think the fact that you were active on social media, I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I can't even imagine, like, you wake up in the morning, the amount of notifications your Twitter would have. Like, that would just be ridiculous.
Oh, it was ridiculous. It was immediately after the game, my phone was exploding with stuff. You're right. Next morning, it would go on all night long. And if there's ever a night when I was drinking and responding, it wasn't a good thing. But like literally, you have to have, and being a coach last year, you have to talk to the players about it and how they cannot soak these things in. They can't take it personally, because no offense to anybody out there listening, there is a lot of people that have no fucking idea what they're talking about. They literally have no sniff what they're talking about. But when it's even if there's not a single light and the like, or the person has one follower or whatever, if it's directed at you and you're seeing it on your phone, you're still going to take it personally. Even if you read it a little bit, it gets digested. And you know, our goalie one year he really took it personally, and that is not a good person to mess with.
No.
Mentally. But yeah, that's to the heights that social media can get there. It's the point where I literally just blocked and unfollowed people left, right, and center.
Yeah. Well, I've said it on here a million times. I have no idea why any athlete would be on Twitter. I have no idea why you would do that to yourselves. Because it'd just be like, I mean, I'm in my little insignificant role on Twitter. I mean, I've been shit talked too, and it just drives me nuts that it's just like you just want to reach through the screen, and it's like you wouldn't say this to me in my face, you know. But I couldn't imagine what you guys would go through. Like, oh my god.
Well, that's just it. Those guys that were saying that wouldn't say it to my face are literally coming up to me later on. Hey, Fitzy, how you doing? Good. Thanks for stopping. Blah blah blah. And it is what it is. Like, I get it, and I see what you're saying. Yes, the abuse is ridiculous. But the kids that reach out to you on there, and some people that want to interact, that does outweigh the bad stuff. Because there is a lot of people that get a lot of positivity out of it, and it's fun to you know, interact with kids that maybe don't talk to anybody, you know. So it's it can be a very good tool, but you're right, the 90% of social media really is just so bad.
No, absolutely. And I mean, yeah, and you have like in Belfast, old Blake Wheels there, kids like that. I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, like you said, that's actually really the point, in my opinion, of social media, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, but, okay. One of the characters I have to ask you about, and you had a fight with him. I had him on my show. And again, I don't really pay attention to that much hockey anymore or whatever, and especially over in the UK scene. I mean, I'd follow you and Nickerson and guys like that, but this guy really wasn't on my radar. No offense to him, but I told him this, but I had him on my show. Well, holy shit. Like, you talk about the most, I don't even know, that the UK fans were all over me about the episode was Joe Grimaldi.
Oh, yeah.
What was your impressions of Joe? And I know you fought him. Yeah, Joe Grimaldi. What's Zach Fitzgerald's opinion?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't want to really. I feel like, and I've almost thought about some of my answers already, where I don't really want to be a guy that like calls people out. But like at the same time, the way that he was when I fought him, the game, the way that he was playing it, it was one of those times where it's like, you're either going to answer the bell or I'm going to make you answer the bell because I'm not going to let you get away with it.
Yep.
And it got to the point where he had to answer the bell. And that's the last I saw of him, because I wouldn't have wanted to see him again. I would have chased him around every single game. But about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, or whatever, is when his incident happened. So
I didn't. Yeah.
Didn't see him later.
But I was going to say, were you surprised when you heard about that?
No, because I never heard a good thing about him. Even the people in Edinburgh wanted him out of there.
That was sort of the response I got. Oh, that episode, I'll tell you, it was, I mean, yeah. I got like hate mail over that episode, and I was like, well, whatever, you're listening.
Yeah, that's so, a sad thing.
Yeah, I'm like, well, you know what, he said you had to listen to it. I mean, he was actually a really funny interview. You know, it was like, okay. But he laid it all out.
Check it out.
Well, I mean, he owned it, whatever. I mean, he laid it all out, so, well, you know.
If he owned it, then that's cool, man. That's you know what? We're all humans, and we live and we learn. Like, there's so much stuff going. People will never understand if they've never been put into the position of what adrenaline can do to you.
Yeah.
And things that you won't even think you could do, you do, and the regrets, some of the regrets that I have that I will never forget about is just what I have to live with. And that was because of sometimes not being able to control myself.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, and that's the frustrating thing, you know, that like you said, that people don't understand. It's like, well, at the same time, you know, these same jokers that'll shit talk you for it are the ones that want you to act like the animal, right? So you do that, exactly. And then all of a sudden it's, oh, he's mean now. Oh, well, okay, right. You know, like.
Yeah, no, I agree, the double edge, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? And like you said, it's, you know, if anybody's ever been in a fist fight before, it's like, it's not like you're thinking clearly when it's done, you know, and I no. think people get so wrapped up in this, like, I've bitched about this a million times on here and on Twitter and everything else, but, like, these people that go on and on about this code, like, whatever that is, I mean, I've never even, okay, but they just act like it's Marcus of Queensberry, and afterwards it's all bro hug and bum taps, and can't wait to work out with you in the summer, bro. You know, it's like, no, you know, it's like, this is a fist fight, and I don't really like this guy right now, you know, so.
Exactly.
You know, whatever, but.
No, yeah, I mean, the only thing I would add on that is, you're right, it's, at that time, it's do or die, and then there's going to be a time when, yeah, there's the bro, but it's more the respect thing, it's not the, you know, it's the warrior that respect you.
Yeah, and some guys you have it, and then other guys, like you said, you know, we don't, whatever, but you play against them, it's like, I have no respect for that guy. So I don't give a shit if he's down, I'm going to hit him again, because why not?
Yep, totally. You know? And there's usually a reason why.
Well, and that's the thing, it's like, okay, the guy's fought like 6 or 7 times this year, he hasn't done that. Now, all of a sudden, he does it one time, when everybody flips out about it. Well, you don't think there was a reason why he just did that? Like, he just didn't do it, you know? It's like, I don't know. Whatever. People, man. But one of these things, speaking of, like, we kind of touched on it earlier with the player safety and the suspension and everything else, and a lot of thing that got blown up, and I still didn't understand what the issue was of course the incident with Danny Bois that you had, where he grabs you from behind, pulls you out of the pile, so you drop your stuff with him, your face up, you square off with him, drill him, and you dropped him. I don't know, I mean, it's unfortunate for him, but it's like, I don't know what the issue was. Like, what did you get suspended for?
Well, there's a lot of things at work here that maybe some fans will hear this from the UK that might actually finally understand it. But what they see is me fighting an unwilling combatant, is the words that they use, right? Well, here, you touched on it. Okay, first of all, the guy just signed. He traveled 15 hours, was locked up in travel suspension for 7 hours. They put him on a bus, and then they made him play a game. So first of all, he's already out of sorts. That's unhealthy. And next thing, Danny Bois, I knew who he was before he even signed there. I guarantee you he knew who I was because we run in the same, you know, we run along the same lines. We've seen each other in the stat packs. We've seen the names in the leading PIMs and all this shit. So it wasn't like he didn't know who I was. And then you go in the game, like you said, he choked me. He didn't just grab me from behind. He choked me. And fucking A, do I hate being choked. There's like, you know, to not be able to breathe and not be able to get out of it, I can't stand that. But I got out of it, I turn around, and I grab him. And it's almost like people think we're just staring each other in the eye. Well, no, we're literally talking about him and I fighting. And him calling me the tough guy and yada, yada, yada. And yes, it basically got to the point of where we kind of touched on it earlier. Is it going to be you or me? And you're choking me out and talking like you're going to fight me. We're going. I'm dropping my shit. Yeah, I might have jumped the gun, but I caught him. Then I stopped and gave him a chance to fight back. He's still talking shit, still talking shit. At this point, I'm already fired up, so I throw one more. And then he dropped his gloves, and I caught him with one more. Do I feel good about that? Fuck no, I do not feel good about that in any sense. But knowing his history, he's jumped many guys and thrown the gloves and all that shit. So do I feel bad? Not really, because he choked me out. He instigated it. We talked about fighting. He caught the worst end of it. It's not going to be on my trophy, what I talk about. But people need to understand that it's not just what it looks like where I just beat up an unwilling combatant. There's literally, we're yelling at each other, talking about fighting. I know him from the past. He's choked me out. That's enough reason for me to scrap.
Well, yeah. And like you said, it's not like you're grabbing some guy that's never fought before, you know, exactly. Like, I mean, he's done it. He knows what's going on. I mean, you know,
exactly.
Did you ever have any interaction with him after?
No, they basically kind of like, and that's just the way that team was. He lost the fight. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. They gave him like five more games and then shipped him out of there.
Yeah,
like that. And then he signed in on Austria in a higher paying league, getting paid probably triple what he was getting paid there. So
there you go. Yeah. So
yeah.
Well, you know, and how many would you get? Two or three games for that?
I think I got five.
But like, what was there? Like, so you're sitting there with player safety. Like, again, what was the reason for giving you the five games? Like,
I believe it was unwilling combatant because his gloves weren't dropped and I threw a punch. That was their reasoning, was an unwilling combatant, even though they didn't analyze the choke.
Yeah.
Or the player's history, you know. I think it's just that's the difference between a player safety over here and what they kind of threw together there.
How, like, that first year there, how... Now you're adapting to all the bigger rink, blah blah blah, all that stuff, and probably getting more, obviously more playing time than, you know, not knocking you, but you're probably getting more ice time than usual. So this is sort of a different deal for you. How was it? Like, how were the, like, I mean, I've heard horror stories of the referees. Like, what was the reffing like? And like what's the difference between?
Well, I didn't help myself at all because I was coming from the American League where I was literally hacking and whacking, little cross checks, little jabs here and there, you know, just the way that you play in North America. There's little things that you do because you're in tight quarters, the ice is smaller. And so I didn't get away with any of that. And then, you know, when I would try to intimidate somebody after the whistle or something, they would flop down, I'd get called, blah, blah, blah. So I got a lot of extra PIMs and a lot of minors, and it was not something I was proud of. But there was a lot of times where they called me simply because I was 13 and the purple jersey with the orange beard. And so, yeah, I didn't love that aspect. I think it's one of the, and I'm sure you've seen it talked about many times, and it was something that they are aware of. It's just growing the referees' knowledge and their experience, because realistically, like I mentioned, that league has come a long way in the last 5 years, and everything has to go with it, including the referees and training those guys. And they're doing their best, and there's some guys coming from Europe and whatever, but it just, unfortunately, at the time, it's just not up to par, and it is one of the things that is holding that league back a little bit, and I hope these guys will never take any offense to that, because I would want to be the first one to help them, because it helps the game. And there's no knock on them, not that they're bad people or whatever, but the game's moving fast. And like I mentioned, there's players coming from the American League, blah, 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 fast leagues. And they just, the whole product has to be on par, or there's going to be inconsistency. And some of the main issues is the logistics of the referees. They just don't spread them out enough, so you see the same guys over and over, and if you piss that guy off, well, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, even me as a coach last year, and I'm guilty of it as a player, yelling at the guys and then making up and whatever. But being on the bench, I was doing my best to keep calm and let the players do that, but it was to the point where I was shaking my head for a lot of calls. And so it was frustrating at times, but there's a lot of dialogue going on with the growth of it, and I hope the best for him.
No, absolutely. Well, the following year, you moved to Sheffield, and you spend 3 seasons there. Why leave Brayhead, and what made you go to Sheffield?
Well, in all honesty, I did everything I possibly could to sign back with Glasgow, and I talked to Finner and those guys, and I mean, probably even went out of my way, in all honesty, like, but I liked it there. We liked Scotland, we were excited, and it just wasn't going to work out. And so Paul Thompson with Sheffield just calling me literally every day, and I couldn't just ignore the fact that somebody wanted me. And that's kind of the way that I let my career kind of rule my contracts, is I went where they wanted me. I didn't just wait, and I didn't really let a lot of deals slide off the table, and who knows if I would have ever gotten anything better in my career, who knows, whatever, blah, 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 if there was even better. But I didn't want to let that opportunity go, and they just seemed like they wanted me. So I also saw the opportunity to go play with Sheffield, won the league. They beat us by a point, which if we would have won in Scotland, we would have been fucking legends. But anyway, we went down there because they were playing in the CHL, the Champions Hockey League. So that was cool. We played against Frölunda, top SHL team, and Yip, top Finnish team. So that was a really cool experience. And honestly, my initial thought was, you know, to go have a good year there and even have a good year in the CHL and potentially even look elsewhere outside the UK just to get a little experience around. But it worked out really well in Sheffield. Had a good year. Paul Thompson basically said, well, I didn't realize you could play that well. I just kind of thought you know, I'm like, well, you got what you got. And he said, okay, well, we want you back. We want you back badly. So what do you want? And I said, I want to go to school. And they made it work. And I went to school those second 2 years in Sheffield, really enjoyed our time there. We won the league, won the playoffs, and should have probably had some more silverware out of there, but that was the best part about being there. Is we won championships, good group of guys, and a lot of fun.
No, absolutely. And, of course, over that time, of course, you had your big rivalry with Cam Janssen. So would you fight 4 times or something?
Man, I think we fought like 6 times. But, yeah, like yeah. Playing for Sheffield and Nottingham and having a guy like that, just a thriller. Like, they basically sold not sold games, but it was like a promotion for a fight, right? It was the Janssen Fitzgerald stuff, and the Sheffield Steelers are going to sell out against the Nottingham Panthers, and you know, it was, that's what they want over there.
No, absolutely. And well of course, one of the big things that came up, one of the big dudes and names that came over in Nottingham was Big Earn. Ryan McGrattan. Yeah. I don't, you guys didn't, that never happened, you and Big Earn.
Well, I don't really have a whole lot to say about him. I don't like the way that I was, I don't really have a lot to say about him. That's where I'll leave that.
So, well, one of the rivalries you did have was with, Gagnon, a young guy, Matthew Gagnon. I know you guys had a few run-ins. Those were hellacious fights. What was the deal with you two?
He was the other, up there with Gallant with accuracy. I swear he just nailed my chin about five times. He just straight down Main Street, kind of like a fearless fighter. He just was accurate. And I don't know how he kept nailing me so well, but he's one guy that caught me a lot. We had some good scraps, and once again, it was like a rivalry thing, so they loved all that.
Yeah, well, I know was that the season, I think you and I were actually talking on privately about it, because I think you were kind of catching some shit for not fighting him or something. Were you having jaw issues or something? You broke your jaw, didn't you? Or was it teeth? I can't remember what.
It was my teeth. Was it that year? I'm trying to think. I just asked my wife, but, I blocked a shot in like the last second of the game, right in my teeth. Like it was passed from the sidewall up to the point. I went from the sidewall to the front, like an idiot, blocked, like, you know, down on my knees and just wham, right in my fucking teeth. That was not a good one.
Well, the Doug Glatt.
Exactly. So literally the Doug Glatt.
Yeah, and I think, and then people were kind of, like, he was trying to fight you or something, and you wouldn't fight him, and you were kind of catching shit over it, but it was because of your teeth. I mean, I think you were saying, like, you were getting really frustrated, I know, when I talked to you.
I'm trying to remember our conversation. It doesn't stick out to me. I'm trying to remember what the issue would have been. It had to have been teeth or even, cause I wouldn't have turned him down for any other reason than, having a health issue.
No, yeah, exactly. And that was kind of everybody, yo, what's the Fitzy's probably scared of him, you know, and it's like, and I'm like, no, you know.
And listen, you can go back, okay, about the guy that you previously asked, like, I really don't care anymore. Look, and this will touch on this right here. If a guy comes up to you and he is in your face and it looks like he wants to clobber you, okay, and he is literally standing over you in a fighting position, but he is saying, hey, let's have a good game today. I'm too old for this shit. But every single 7,000 fan around you thinks you're backing down from a fight and you skate away acting like you just backed down a guy, I have no fucking respect for that. And that is nothing I would ever do to a guy. that's why that would have pissed me off about Gagnon, because Gagnon and I would have known that there is a real reason for it. And the speculation online is just nuts.
Oh, I know. Well, that's, and I had to, yeah, that was when I kind of mentioned to a few cats that I was having you on. The UK fans are very excited to have that I'm having you on, but that was one of the couple of the questions were asking about Janssens and Gagnon, and then of course McGrattan were the three names that I was supposed to ask you about. So, well, there we go. Covered that, but
I know I said like I don't have any comment, but realistically, I do almost need to get that out there because, like you say, for the next 15 years, everybody in Nottingham thinks Fitzy is scared of Brian McGrattan. When one time I tried to fight him, he fake dropped him and skated away from me. And then they went down and scored. And it's going to always be something that's remembered and will always piss me off. Like I mentioned a few of the stories. But I'll never be able to get redemption on that one. And look, we talked about it before. Guys like that, they have earned they've paid their dues. Don't have to ever fucking do anything. But just don't put me in a position where I'm in Sheffield and I'm supposed to be this guy And if there's any doubt shed on me when when reality has nothing to do with what's going on, and it's tarnishing my reputation that I've built there, then that pisses me off, you know.
Well, and I mean, and that was my issue with them online. I'm like, well, go and look at his fight card and his history, right. And like, what are we doing here? Come on, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
But it's the optics, right? And it's unfortunately, exactly. And it's yeah. Well, and then I always laugh. Of course, these are the same bozos that love to yell about the code. Well, you want to talk about the code?
Right.
Well,
right.
You know, but exactly.
Right.
Anyway,
the only thing I can. Anything to do with that is I always just walked the line when I played. That was something I always, you know, I just never wanted to cross that line. I wanted to be a player in the game that brought toughness and would stand up for anybody on my team and do whatever it possibly takes to win a game and to protect anybody. But I just, you know, that line is more or less what I was concentrating on.
Yeah. Well, I know I've kept you here a long time. We're going to, like, you know, I won't keep you too much longer. But, of course, we do have to mention you go back to Glasgow. What made you leave Sheffield and go back?
It was a good, talking to them, they wanted a change up there. They were going with a new logo, a new brand, rebrand. They wanted me to captain the team up there and kind of bring the leadership and kind of what I touched on before where I did my best to go up there. I would like to hope that those guys would admit to, because they've admitted to me that they made a mistake not bringing me back there and not saying like I'm trying to pump my own tires, but it would have been a great fit to stay up there. So we had always kind of talked here and there and always kept a good relationship. And it just kind of made sense where I was. I didn't want to stay in Sheffield. I wanted to stay there for anything. They couldn't have offered me. Yeah. The end of my, Sheffield, career did not go well. I wouldn't have signed back there for anything. So I was already looking to get out of there and Glasgow came and it would have felt good to go up there and captain the team in Glasgow. And we had a good record against Sheffield that year, so that was probably my highlight.
Yeah. Well, I have to ask. I mean, you don't have to say anything, but, like, was it a coaching thing or just an organization or a money thing or that you pissed you off?
With Sheffield?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was – I'm trying to remember the initial deal there, but, like, we just – you know, when you don't win in Sheffield pressure's on. I mean, pressure is on. And you talk about pressure in all the wrong places and unmotivating tactics. You can look right there. It was miserable because, you know, we weren't winning. We weren't top of the league or we weren't in a certain position that life was hell. And I remember specifically, more or less, I think, where it started, and it kind of touches back to the Gagnon thing when I had my bubble on. When I busted my face up, I came back. I was out for a while. I came back and played in a game with my bubble on. Ended up lining up a kid that everybody in the league hated. Finally got a chance to hit him. It was lining up to be a perfect open ice hit. He tripped on my D-partner's stick and started heading down as I was stepping up into him. So my elbow, is not extended, but my shoulder and my elbow are starting to come up as I'm, like, starting to project myself in this hit, and it hits him right in the head. So I got suspended for 5 games right away there. And that's where it started there. I was, you know, because of that, even though it was a in my eyes, it was going to be a clean hit. Yeah, I got suspended, but that's just that league and their suspensions. Anyway, and that's where it spiraled, and the relationship started to crumble. And I've never said this.
Yeah, it's just a disrespect thing. Yeah,
and I've never said this out loud. But the worst part about it all is the way that they treated it as well, by releasing a document with about 20 players or 15 players on it saying Sheffield Steelers will not be re-signing these guys or these guys, when in all reality, our contracts were just ending. They had no right to put my name in any sort of publication about re-signing or signing when I was the last thing I wanted. And that was something that I held on. I was so bitter about for about 2 months. I couldn't even answer the Sheffield reporters' phone calls because I didn't want to say anything too bad, but I don't care. I'm done playing hockey now. But that right there should never be done to a player that's not under contract, because what does that look like to, you know, the Red Bulls? Oh, they just released that player. They're going to release him for some reason. Like, they didn't want him back? Oh, or more or less, no, the contract ran out. I want to get the hell out of there. So don't act like it was you. You know, does that make sense?
Well, like, they're sewering you. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, and they're putting a stink on you. And, of course, these teams are like, you know, yeah, what's wrong with Fitzy? You know, what's exactly his deal? Yeah.
And I was already signed with Glasgow, so I didn't really care. But once again, you know, a lot of this stuff going on with my career is reputation. I don't need my reputation tarnished because Sheffield needs to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
Or to appease fans why they're not signing me when, in all reality, I think they were intimidated by my fan interaction, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, I think, in all honesty, I think it was something that they saw they couldn't control. And it's not like I would ever use it in any way. I loved it. I always, every single fan base I ever played for, I did every single thing I could to show my appreciation back to them, because I was that kid that was waiting after the games for the broken stick, the autographs, and just the winks from the players, you know?
Yep. No, absolutely. Well, there you go, UK fans. There's your answer.
Yeah, like, that's pretty...
Yeah, well, like, now they know, right? Because, I mean, all it is up to that point is you're only getting one side of the story. And, exactly. You know, as an outsider looking in from the... And this isn't you saying it. This is me saying it. And I've been very vocal on Twitter about it. There's a certain cat in Sheffield that should learn to shut his mouth. And he's embarrassing. That's me saying that. But you're off to Glasgow again. And but one of your teammates over there, who I'm a huge fan of, is Josh Gratton.
Yep, he was. Yep, Gratz. That was like, wow! I can't believe we signed this guy. But he went over there and he was lighting it up, man.
Well, I think he's a far better player than I think people give him credit for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yep. And kind of like we were mentioning before, a guy gets a little bit more, he's not more or less judged on every little mistake, he's given more of a leash to play, you can really see what they can do, because, you know, all your tough guys that make the NHL in minor hockey, they were probably some of the best players.
Yeah.
But you get into a pool with, you know, all these top players, your Crosbys and your Stalls and whatever, it's a different level, so... Yeah, you give, you know, a guy like that, he was lighting it up, yeah, and he was tough as nails, you know, and so it was cool to have him as a teammate, because nobody wanted anything to do with our team. We were real tough.
Yeah, I mean, and you guys had a hell of a year.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, well, and then, so the following year, you're back again, and did you know at this point, like, what was the, like, did you know at the end of that year that you were done playing and you were going to coach?
No, in all honesty, I was looking for a contract all through that summer. I had something going in Slovakia, some talks going on in the VHL and stuff like that. But nothing was really coming through. And, you know, you start researching the country and, yeah, it's beautiful. But you start talking to people that have had experience in Slovakia and stuff like that, and the risk of not being paid, and like the foreign language and being in a room where there's 5% English being spoken. I don't know. It just like whatever. And so, you know, I was in talks with Glasgow and I wanted to go back there too. And he just called me, Gareth Chalmers was calling me one day and said, "Hey, Fitz, what do you think about coaching?" I said, "Well, fuck, I guess I hadn't thought about that, but what about player coach?" Because they'd done that in the UK, and he said, "Well, you know, we're past that." And I agreed. I think that league is way past that. But the more and more I thought about it, it was, you know, it was head coach and director of hockey. So I got to recruit the team. you know, more or less run the team. It was kind of like a one-man show. I didn't even have an assistant. I had a player assistant coach, but I didn't have an assistant coach. I had, you know, my COO, but he was more or less working and worrying about the business. He was helping me with the agents and stuff like that. But it just seemed like, what an opportunity. I can't pass this up. Let's go for it. And I was really excited about it. I was hoping to go back for another year, and that's kind of what was talked about. But, you know, there was some false promises there.
And then that was it. So, I mean, it was kind of, it was sort of an abrupt end to your playing career, really. When did you have any thought about coming back to North America to play?
Yeah, I did, actually. I thought about going to the East Coast and trying to play assistant coach there, or even just playing in the coast and giving it another shot in North America, kind of like, you know, hopefully playing like Florida and, you know, get that experience, get on PHPA union stuff and kind of go try to transfer myself to the business side of stuff, or, you know, coaching or whatever. This just opportunity, it was too good to pass up, and it was awesome. I loved it. We were home for the first time in a while with my young daughter. So my wife and daughter, got kind of the brunt end of it because I was so busy. Like literally I'd be up till 3 a.m. researching stuff. I'd sleep till 7, get up, looking for players, talking all day long, in and out. I mean, we were staying with my parents too. I hadn't seen them in years. So it was a life changer, and I kind of just dove right in, and I don't regret it one bit, but it's just unfortunate not to do it again. So yeah, I wouldn't take it back, and I did want to play. You're right, it was an abrupt kind of end. Now I'm kind of like sitting here, you know, I haven't been in the gym in a while, but you know, you watch guys, you know, like you mentioned Nate Thompson, you know, like the Colburns and the Carey Prices that were my age. I do have those kind of regrets sometimes, maybe calling it too short, because you always have the, you know, people telling you play till you just play forever, play as long as you can, play as long as you can, which is true because it is a short career. But I'm also proud of what I did with the coaching, and, you know, we'll see what goes on forward from there. But we did love it. And hockey's always going to be a part of my life, but yeah, it kind of sucks sitting here thinking about it as I speak, not playing pro again. But I had a great career. Kind of came in on the other end of, I'm all right. I got my injuries here and there, but I'm a fortunate guy to still be kind of, you know, cruising around and able to do whatever I can with my daughter and my family. So I'm fortunate to be on the other end and fairly unscathed.
No, absolutely. Well, like you said, yeah, man, you had a hell of a run, and you got to see the world and play, and you played a game in the NHL. I mean, yeah, I mean, you did things that, what, like 99% of players never do, right? So, no, for sure. I mean, if I were, I certainly wouldn't look back with any regret or anything like that. I mean, that was, you had a hell of a run, man. And it was, and as a fan, it was, from watching you right from your first days in Seattle. You know, we used to call you Zach the Hack. We thought it was just great that you were you were just in there swinging all the time, and to follow you all the way to the UK was it was, as a fan, it was great to watch. And congratulations, man! You had a hell of a run.
Oh, I appreciate it, Darren. Yeah, no, we've been talking for a long, long time. This was inevitable at some point, but yeah, no, I appreciate it that you've been supportive of me, because you know, like you say, the social media can be disheartening sometimes, but when I talk to people like you, it's just what it's all about, really.
Well, man, absolutely, I appreciate that. And before we let you go, we gotta ask, like, what's Zach Fitzgerald doing today?
Well, we're trying to figure that out, but my buddy owns a double rink in Toronto. It's called the Hockey Factory. I'm helping him right now, where it's basically all ages up to pro. A lot of guys that are in the NHL are coming through there. And basically we're just working all age levels. Probably more or less stick around in minor hockey, but also coaching on the side, like privates and skills and some minor team coaching, but staying in the game, just more like a lateral movement, I guess. But I really enjoy it because I've been working with a lot of kids 13, 14 years old that are on the brink of OHL. So OHL or university route or whatever, but you know, that's kind of, it's a hockey hotbed out here, and it's cool to pass on, you know, what I've learned over the years and kind of give back in that way. And to just kind of see myself and them a little bit, because, you know, you don't realize how much you just don't know at that age. You just don't realize the little things that they just don't know yet. And to try to help mold that and influence it is a little bit more, feels a little bit better than it did kind of working with pros, really.
No, absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, you, like, we just even think of yourself, like you said, back at that age at 13 and 14, I mean, the advantages these kids, as, you know, of course it's evolution, right? As the science gets better and the training and everything else, how much further they are ahead than like we were at that age, right?
Oh, I can't even play anymore, dude. The kids that are going to be coming that are up through like 15 to 18 right now are so skilled. It's going to be a different game.
Yep.
But like I was, I don't know if you Pizzetta, but he's a Montreal pick. He was in our on our rink this summer. But he's an absolute animal. You'd love him. He can play the game, but he's tough as nails, and he's not afraid of anybody. So I hope him the best.
Absolutely. Well, it, yeah, like you said, it's always changing and the game has changed. And, but, like I said, you had a hell of a run, man. And I can't thank you enough for sitting down and doing, oh man, I think we, 3 hours we were talking. So, I can't thank you enough. It was awesome. No, it's
good. Yeah, no, thanks for having me, man. I wish you nothing but the best as well, too. So, keep doing what you're doing. I'm listening as well. So, hello to everybody out there, and keep listening to Darren and rock it out, brother. I appreciate what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And no, it's been fun, man. I thank you.
Cheers.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?